Pickaxe.
Hello and welcome to the Eurogamer Newscast, and this week we're discussing the biggest Xbox leak in history. We're looking ahead to the Switch 2's potential launch lineup. We're asking why there are so many industry layoffs, or at least that's what I would be saying. If you're listening to the Eurogamer Newscast, hello, I'm Tom, Eurogamer's editor and host of our weekly discussion podcast, where we break down the biggest gaming news stories and share insight from our news reporting team. Head to your favorite podcast app now to listen. Just search Eurogamer Newscast.
Hello and welcome back to The Review of Death, your weekly Doctor Who podcast where we talk about Doctor Who and news, and in this case, the latest episode of Doctor Who, which aired yesterday.
Doctor Who Flux.
Doctor Who Flux.
How good does it feel that everybody like loves Doctor Who at the moment?
I was thinking this morning. I was looking at my timeline, and apart from maybe one or two responses from people, generally speaking, everybody's bloody loving it.
The only people that I'm getting replies from saying they don't like it are exactly the kind of people that you would expect.
Yeah.
Just contrarians.
Yeah.
Union Jack flags in their bios, you know. And I'm not saying that there aren't things that, you know, you can say, you can have misgivings about the story and Flux as a whole. But it just feels so good that people have just gone like, that was great, cannot wait for more, and everybody's just like super up for it, so.
Everyone's on the same page, which feels like the sort of first time in, I don't know,
forever.
Like a decade.
Yeah, literally.
Yeah,
it's bonkers. It's certainly the first time since this kind of discourse about Doctor Who has been at like a high pitch or like, you know, a fever pitch. It feels like this is the first time that everybody's actually kind of rallied around it and gone, no, this is really good. And like, you know, like I posted about it on Instagram today, and half of me was going, I just want to celebrate how good this is. But the other half of me is like, watch it.
Yeah.
It's really good. And like, and also, you know, it deserves the viewing figures. It deserves higher viewing figures than it may actually be getting.
Yeah, this is the sad thing. I was like, oh, now, if only all that could just be put. I mean, I think the viewing figures are fine. Like, it was still like, what, the like ninth most watched
show of the week or whatever.
Which is fantastic.
Yeah. It beat out Emmerdale
and all that crap.
Stuff.
So, yeah. You know.
It's still getting, was it 3.9 or 3.8?
Yes. Yeah, it was down like half a million, I think, from the week before. But then again, you've got to think, it was Bonfire Night weekend with people going out to
I think more people
like
would have been out to do that kind of stuff than they would have been the weekend before to do Halloween.
Yeah.
Do we know what the 7 day is for last week's story?
I'm not sure.
That might have come out today.
Might have just been shy of 6 million, maybe.
Okay.
I think.
Okay.
I don't know.
Without wanting to start the review on a downer, do you think it's possible that Doctor Who could drop below 3 mil for an overnight this year?
I don't think so.
No.
I'd be shocked. I'd be really shocked, especially with like the buzz that's going around it.
But is that just amongst us? Does everybody else think that this is way worse than stuff they were doing last year?
Oh, I don't know.
Like the general public. Are the general public watching this and going, this is crap? But just Doctor Who fans are going, this is really, really good.
I mean, perhaps it's just that the general public have, you know, they've been presented with all of these awful headlines about Doctor Who's woke, Doctor Who's this, and all that kind of crap, that they just aren't going near it. So even if they did switch it on, they're not even switching it on at all.
Yeah.
That's
a really interesting discussion as well. Like, how low does it go before you go, all right, that is the baseline only Doctor Who fans are watching now.
Yeah.
So you can only build on that. What does that number actually look like?
Is it
2 million? Is it 1.5 million? Are there 1.5 million diehard Doctor Who fans that will watch every single week live, and the rest of them are just members of the general public?
Yeah.
It would be really interesting to know those kind of analytics, like to see how low it would go before it's just Doctor Who fans watching. Because it can't be the case.
Did you watch it live?
I did watch it live.
Wow,
yes. Watch it live.
We were just about to watch it live.
Yeah.
And Mum was like, oh, I've got quite a few things that I need to do. I was like, what? She's like, oh, it's all right. You carry on watching it. I'll watch it on my own later. And Johnny was like, no. We can watch it later.
John A.
I was like, fine. We'll watch it later. So I was there just like,
I know,
scratching at the bloody armchair.
I had to get up and get something out of the oven while the previously was on.
Oh, right.
And that was annoying.
It's frustrating. I remember once during the RTD years, like I missed the pre-titles bit. And I just got in, and for whatever reason, and God, that annoyed me for the whole episode. I was thinking, I've missed, like, I know it's only like a minute.
You can watch it tomorrow morning on BBC Three, though,
yeah,
so
yeah,
that's
yeah,
all right.
Yeah.
Before we start, we should say
We should probably say who we are. Oh, yeah. We do that every time. Hello, I'm Matthew. This is Billy.
Hopefully we have lower thirds with our names on them. Yeah, we'll have lower thirds.
Unless you're listening to this as a podcast, then you won't have a clue.
In which case, it's completely irrelevant.
Yeah.
So we should say who we are. Yes, thanks very much.
Hello.
And we should also say that very sadly this week, we lost a big member of the Doctor Who family.
Yeah.
Bob Baker, co-creator of K-9 and the writer of, I think, all but one of the original Wallace and Gromit movies.
I think so, yeah.
Has passed away.
Yeah.
And Bob was with us on Doctor Who on Twitch.
Yeah, in this very room.
In this room, sat opposite this sofa.
Yeah.
And I knew his granddaughter and, all love to them and stuff. And it was just really, really sad.
Yeah.
Like, you know, there aren't many people that have had that much of a significant impact on Doctor Who that are still around.
No.
And I think really, you know, everybody loves and praises Bob's work, but it's only when somebody's gone you think, God, the impact they left, the legacy, yeah, you know, outside of Doctor Who and obviously within the confines of this silly show.
Yeah.
Is massive.
Yeah. Well, it's funny you should say that because when it was announced, I went, oh gosh, Bob Baker's died. And my head of department sat next to me was like, oh, who's died? And I said, oh, this big Doctor Who writer created K-9. I said, oh, but he wrote all of Wallace and Gromit. He's like, I thought Nick Park created Wallace and Gromit. I said, he came up with the characters, I said, but Bob Baker wrote all the stories. And he's like, oh, wow. He's like, gosh, that's a shame. So it's like, oh, I'm glad that people outside of the Doctor Who world can appreciate him.
That's an accolade. That's a credit that just goes completely unnoticed.
Yeah.
Like, you know, K-9 and the kind of the rights of K-9 have always been, like, there's an Alan Partridge joke about K-9. Yeah, that I think it's when he does, he's doing this like fake TV interview.
Right.
And he says, oh, I've just bought the rights to K-9, Doctor Who's robotic dog assistant. And K-9 existed in a kind of bubble of its own for the longest time.
Yeah.
And, you know, the reason why we didn't see him a lot in Sarah Jane Adventures, and obviously there was the Australian spin-off and Time Quake and all that kind of stuff. But centrally, Bob Baker was responsible for some of the most important moments in Doctor Who's history. The first ever multi-doctor story was co-written by Bob Baker.
Yeah.
You know, and the story that introduced K-9, obviously, you know, the Invisible Enemy, is a good story, I think, within its own right. I think that's a lot of flack.
Yeah.
But it introduces K-9.
Yeah.
That's like a seminal moment in Doctor Who's history.
Yeah.
And he was there right through it, you know, and apologies for what we said, Bob, about Underworld earlier in this run of podcasts. But we just thought it was probably right to say something about the good man.
And it's nice that his own solo Doctor Who story, Nightmare of Eden, is going to be out on Blu-ray at the end of the year.
Very soon.
On the season 17 set, so that's nice.
Really cool.
Yeah, so yeah, very sad.
Very sad. Right, so on a lighter note.
Oh, and of course.
Yeah.
Well, as we were talking about Sontarans, he wrote Sontaran Experiment, didn't
Sontaran
he?
Experiment.
Yeah.
The other really, really great Sontaran. Now, I saw a couple of people talking about this.
Right.
Do you think this, because we're now going to review War of the Sontarans, Chapter 2 of Doctor Who Flux, do you think this is the best ever on-screen depiction of the Sontaran race? Not necessarily an individual Sontaran.
Oh, for sure.
I can't believe we've just seen that last night.
Yeah.
How crazy is that for a villain that's been around for such a long time that we think we know the score, we think we know what the stories are like and how they're going to be interpreted on screen. It was just like, that. This is the Sontaran story we've always been told about. And what they've always said to have been like in battles and all that kind of stuff.
Not tripping over sun loungers.
Not
in
tripping
the
over sun loungers or talking about their tit milk. We actually see them being warmongers and being aggressive and being tribal and killing each other.
Properly ruthless.
Properly ruthless.
They were so good. And props to props to Dan Starkey. He did a great job as his Sontaran. But to the main dude,
Jonathan Watson. Skak and Riskor.
He did
Riskow.
A really great job, and I thought he did a really good job of differentiating the two. I know he was like more Scottish as one and slightly less Scottish as the other.
Yeah.
But he did a really good job. And obviously, you know, the prosthetics were different. Mm. But it was really great. And you know, I liked that they used him and Dan Starkey sort of interchangeably between like voices of the troopers and stuff, because they're a clone race, you know.
It makes perfect sense. I think he may have needed a more of a significant prosthetic change, I think, is the other.
I mean,
obviously, I was watching it both times knowing, okay, this is supposed to be a different Sontaran.
Yeah.
I know they're a clone race. I know that kind of sounds like a silly thing to say.
Yeah.
But I just think there needed to be maybe like a different tone of skin or something that was just significantly different enough.
More like a Styre.
Yeah.
Styre to a Lynx.
Yeah, yeah, like that kind of, because he's got that kind of green, kind of clay, kind of coloured head, you know. Something like that would have been cool, but. My God, like one of the best ever Sontaran stories was on last night.
Yeah, this is it.
That's crazy.
I keep thinking to myself, I was like, well, it was certainly better than the Poison Sky Sontaran stratagem. Mm-hmm. And it was certainly better than the two Doctors. And, you know, I mean, I like the Sontaran experiment, but...
Are you going to say this is better than the Sontaran experiment?
I don't know. I wouldn't go...
As an episode overall?
I mean, it was bloody good.
I
really enjoyed it. And even Jonathan really enjoyed it. Like, again, we sort of ended it and he was like, that was really good. That was really good. And he even said, because I said, I really enjoyed Jodie Whittaker in this one. I said, I thought she was really good. And he said, yeah. He said, I thought she was really good in this one as well. And he said, shame she hasn't had same sort of material. I think it's this whole thing. I said it in previous videos before we did this as a podcast. I kept saying, your Doctor is only as good as your villains. And I think this is why Series 11 didn't work.
Flux is working.
And I think that's why she was good in stories last year. Because I thought she was really good against the Master and against Ashard or whatever his name, the Cyberman. When she's got a good baddie...
This is the thing.
Yeah.
When she has those one-on-one confrontations, she always shines.
Yeah.
Even if it's in a scene, you know, like the Dalek scene in Resolution, that kind of back and forth, she's always exceptional in those kind of, right, I'm the Doctor, let's have a parlay.
Yeah, yeah,
you know, all
yeah.
those scenes where she's fronting up and she's being the Doctor, and she has a good foe to buck up against.
Yeah.
She's exceptional.
Yeah.
I think that's where her Doctor... Her performance as the Doctor shines. That and individual conversations with companions when it gets a bit real and it gets a bit sort of, you know, the stuff with Yaz last week and all that sort of stuff. I think she's at her best when, what is that? What is that trait of hers? Sort of undefinable, isn't it?
Mm, and I like her sort of vulnerability when, you know, all the stuff's going wrong with the TARDIS at the beginning of the story, when she tries to go into the TARDIS and the doors have gone.
Oh,
which is...
That was a great shot.
So cool. I mean, I love that. It looks beautiful, the TARDIS illuminated on the battlefield. Oh, some great shots in this story. It just looked fantastic. Mm-hmm. And the CGI was so good. You know, all the Sontaran ships looked amazing. I loved that the design department had gone back to the Sontaran experiment logo on the inside of Styre's door on his ship, and that was on the flags.
Uh-huh.
Just a tiny little detail, but it came back. I was like, oh, it's good.
But it didn't feel like that way that Stephen Moffat would go, here's a classic TARDIS console room.
Yeah.
Where it's kind of like he's jangling keys in front of you and distracting you from the plot, ignore the plot kind of thing. And I will say, before we get into sort of the beat by beat sort of breakdown of it, there absolutely was not enough plot within the Sontaran Crimean War Mary Seacole conceit to sustain 50 minutes to an hour.
No.
But I think this is where Flux is really coming into its own, is where it gives you a really distilled dose of that story, like a Cliff Notes version of it. And it's almost like you have the first 25 minutes, and obviously this is interspersed and sprinkled throughout, but it's like you've got two 25-minute episodes of Classic Who bolted together to make, you know, almost a two-part story, because you've got all that stuff in the Temple of blah, blah, blah. I've got it written down because I did some research on this. You've got all the stuff going on with Swarm, all the stuff. I mean, there's a few threads that I think have been dropped that I think for casual viewers they're now going to struggle if it suddenly comes back in episode 3.
Okay.
Which we can get into.
Yeah.
But, yeah, I mean, this all just ties into me. It ties into, for me, the fact that Doctor Who has just become like a really satisfying program to watch week after week.
Yeah.
And it's really satisfying to celebrate it. Because with Jodie's portrayal, I felt very vindicated the last 24 hours. Because I'm almost tempted to go, I fucking told you all.
She's
brilliant.
Yeah, yeah.
And, you know, it might be that the material she was given, not necessarily from Chris Chibnall, not necessarily from any individual writer.
Yeah.
And it might just be the direction, it might just be the tone of the show at the time.
Yeah.
Didn't give her an opportunity to shine as regularly or for as long a period as she has in these episodes. But I genuinely came away from that thinking, obviously the stuff with Swarm and the Flux stuff is cool on top of what I thought was a really good episode of Doctor Who.
Yeah.
And I've come away from most Jodie episodes feeling that way. Mm. So for me, it wasn't such a revelation that the last 2 weeks have been exceptionally good, because they have been. For me, it's just been, that was a great episode as per usual, in my opinion, and the Flux stuff is awesome. And I for that reason, the last 24 hours, I've just been feeling really, vindicated. It's just like, I know the quality of the stuff. If you compare this to, like, you know, Orphan 55, everybody beats that story over the head.
Yeah.
And it, you know, probably isn't overly fair to do so.
No.
But there is obviously a difference in quality, but there's also a difference in what it's trying to do.
Of course.
If you had Orphan 55 and then they cut away from it and it turned out we're on this planet and there's Swarm.
Yeah.
Do you know what I mean? It would be just as good because the Flux, the components work so well.
Yeah.
And I think that's why, you know, like everybody's just been celebrating it, because for the people that have been missing a certain thing, the Flux conceit and Swarm and Azure and now Passenger, they're bringing all of that stuff that they feel have been missing through the Jodie Whittaker era.
Yeah.
But then Jodie Whittaker fans and Chris Chibnall apologists like myself are still getting what they liked this whole time as well. It's just working on every
win-win
level.
For everybody,
it's a win-win for everybody. It's really cool. What did you think of the previously? Did you think enough was covered there to kind of give people who maybe didn't watch last week
enough? It was
very quick,
wasn't it?
Yeah.
It was very quick. Obviously, it didn't matter to me as a sad git who's watched it twice already. Mm. But yeah, I did think, gosh, I mean, crikey, that was a lot from that episode to try and cram into a previously.
In like 25 seconds.
Yeah, so I don't, I don't blame them for that at all. I think someone complained about the resolution to the cliffhanger, but I thought that was quite clear that she was like,
well, they had some kind of amnesia and they
just
woke
like,
up
we were hit by the Flux and they were obviously displaced in time.
I was a little bit confused by that, I have to say, because I think what I'm confused about is the physical and the temporal.
Yeah.
Like space and time and the way that's working together. Because
because obviously we're seeing planets like disintegrating.
And we know that, and so the Carvanista, I'm not buying this Carvanista, Luparis, sorry. I'm not buying the Lupari ships encasing Earth. I'm not buying that at all.
No.
And like the Sontaran snuck in just in time. So the Flux is still having an effect because, but surely when the Flux happened, it wasn't affecting 1800s Earth.
No.
It was affecting Earth on that particular night on Halloween in Liverpool in 2021.
Yeah.
So they've gone back to prehistory. I guess they have taken over, but then none of those buildings in Liverpool would have been built and constructed. And the Doctor specifically says, because I was waiting for the explanation to go, it's the Flux.
Yeah.
The Doctor specifically says, this isn't enough. Like, this is the Flux can't have anything to do with this. There's a line in the British Hotel.
Right.
When she has her briefing with the Commander.
Yeah.
And with Mary Seacole. She says, this can't be the aftershock of the Flux for some particular reason.
Oh, that's really annoying, because that was literally where I paused it when I came to let you into the office.
She pointedly says it. She says, I don't think this is the effect of the Flux.
Right.
And then she says, later we've got the Sontaran time ships.
Yeah.
So it is actually the Sontarans just going back in time.
Yes.
That is where the story lost me. I think that's where the Flux as a thing. I need to have more of a handle on what the rules of it.
Yeah, that makes sense. Yeah.
Basically. But where the bloody hell is the Doctor at the start of this story?
Well, my initial thought was Lung Barrow.
Everybody's saying that.
Yeah. But now, obviously, I've not read Lung Barrow.
No. But there's an illustration of it
that
went around on Twitter. I'm not sure where that's from.
Yeah, I when I saw it, because Jonathan was like, oh, I wonder what that is. And I said, oh, I reckon that's Lung Barrow. And he was like, what? I said, oh, you know, the ancestral home of the Doctor.
Yeah.
And I said, I'm pretty sure it is meant to be all weird and janky and a bit muddled. I could be talking nonsense. Like I said, I've never read it. But for some reason, I feel like that is a thing.
I saw a photo. I saw somebody uploaded on Twitter a drawing of Lung Barrow. And it is that, basically.
Right.
And it's floating, I think.
Oh,
and
right.
It's sort of on a mountain over the river Lung or something. And it looks a bit more fairy tale in the illustration. But yeah, or is that just like where the Doctor goes, like a mind palace type thing? Mm. Is it not as literal as that is a place that she's been before in her life? You know, I guess, are these memories being unlocked, or
yeah,
she's learning more about her past, yeah, and all that sort of stuff?
I assume that it's memories being unlocked. Mm. And perhaps maybe there was a significance to it being in black and white. Is it like a signifier to, or this is like Hartnell days? Is this sort of, are we going to see young Billy Hartnell?
Quite possibly. It's
what's interesting,
yeah, go on,
is that during the press for, I can't remember if it was Series 11 or Series 12, mm, but it was at Comic-Con, mm, and someone asked Chris Chibnall? As I said, I was like, that isn't right.
That's not his name.
That's not his name. Someone asked Chris Chibnall, will Looms be a part of the new series? And he was like, oh, okay, well, not this year, but that's all to do with Lung Barrow and stuff. I've never read it. And then obviously this happened last night, and I was like, I wonder if this was something that he had planned. That he was like, oh, I'll put Lung Barrow in it.
Mm.
I wonder if he was there on that day thinking, shit.
It's but it is that level of Doctor's backstory, history of Gallifrey. We're going back right to the Dark Times by the looks of it, you know, all that sort of stuff.
Yeah.
We're going right back to the beginning of Timeless Society. We did that last year with the Timeless Children, pretty much.
Yeah.
But now we're on this planet called Time.
Time, yeah.
And I've now, some people are saying, is this actually where the Doctor's from?
Yeah.
You know, like, is this where the Timeless Children came from? Yeah. That, you know, Tetuan or whatever the name was.
Yeah.
You know, kind of, Tektaeun.
Tektaeun, that's it.
They harvested these children or whatever.
Yeah.
Is this where they're all from?
Yeah.
And but then, you know, what are the Maori?
Yeah,
it's so interesting.
I think, from what I can gather, so from the dialogue of those little pyramid things...
Yeah. Which sound like John Leeson.
Yeah, well, it's the guy from the Leisure Hive, the scientist guy. The guy who's doing all the temporal experiments in the Leisure Hive.
Pangle.
No, not Pangle, the human man.
Oh, right, okay.
So it's him, he's doing the voice.
Oh, right.
Yeah, I think it was Guy Lambert posted it on Twitter.
Yeah.
And I was like, oh, I knew he was going to be in this episode, and I didn't realise it was that
I meant
guy's
to write
voice.
His name down, and I forgot, oops.
Yeah, so yeah, he's doing the voices. And Jonathan said, oh, these little pyramid things remind me of the Megara from Stones of Blood, because,
right,
you know, they've got that very quick sort of clipped way of talking,
and they're a bit
erratic and stuff. So I really liked them, but there's something that they said in the dialogue about, oh, the... like time flows through
them.
They're
like a conduit.
They're a conduit. And I was thinking, have these poor things that are clearly, they're imprisoned there, you know, they have no real sentience or anything of their own. Is that a Time Lord thing? Have the Time Lords, because, you know, we know the Time Lords are fecking shit. Do we think that back in the Dark Times, did the Time Lords go, oh, time's all a bit of a cock up? To control it, we'll get these sentient beings who are very attuned to time as a force.
Yeah.
And we'll lock them in this place on the planet Time, but we'll wipe it from everyone's memories, like with the Timeless Children.
Right.
Because that's a dirty secret. That's a bit too dirty.
We can't tell people about.
Yeah. I think it's going to all... I think it must all be Timeless Child related.
It's got to be.
Yeah.
Because otherwise, there's no like urgency in the Doctor to discover the truth.
Yeah.
And also it wouldn't be leading us to what seems like a very personal journey for her, with, you know, all of these things are affecting her and Swarm is talking to her.
Yeah.
Like obviously he has a confrontation with Yaz and Vinda later on, but it's all centered around her and she's still, everything's kind of, the universe is still turning around her.
Yeah.
I do like the fact that up until this point, though, we have had no real indication that the Doctor is the most important being in the cosmos.
Yeah.
In the same way that, you know, every week, Stephen Moffat was beating us over the head with, the Doctor is the most important person, everybody must save the Doctor, and all that kind of stuff. It is nice to be like, well, this is actually a personal story for the Doctor to kind of get over. That's a relief, I think, you know. But I do wonder, you know, I've said before, I'm not that keen on knowing too much about the Doctor's past.
No.
But is this so far back that it doesn't matter?
Yeah, this is it. I don't know.
Because it's not like we're watching the Doctor growing up in the Academy.
No, we're not going to... Yeah, and I don't think we will. I think we'll skirt around that.
Mm.
Yeah, I'm interested to see where it goes, for sure. But
did you hear two mentions of the Division, but not in the context of Division?
No.
So the corporal commando, the shouty shouty bloke with the funny hat in the Crimean War.
Oh right.
He was he mentions Division.
Okay.
And Division is mentioned when Yaz introduces herself as police officer. She says Division.
Yeah, she does,
and the first time I watched that scene, the way that Vinda reacts to it,
yeah,
seemed like he was going, oh right, I'm in a safe pair of hands here.
Yeah.
Even if he didn't hear the rest of it or understand the rest of it, he's just heard the word Division.
Oh.
And he's like, okay, cool.
I thought he was just like head over heels in love with Yaz.
That's probably what it is. But in my head, I was like, oh, maybe he's like identified that she's mentioned the Division or something.
Yeah.
Something like that.
And interesting that Azure and Swarm, they mentioned that having been there before.
Oh, all of that.
So... yeah, we know that, again, this must be tied into the Doctor's past life as a Division agent or whatever she was. Yeah, interesting. And I think next week we'll probably get a few more answers.
Well, the Division guns are in the trailer, the same ones that were wielded by the people on the planet when Swarm broke free.
And the Doctor's got a new coat.
That's a whole other deal. anyway, so they arrive in the Crimean War. Scanning a downed soldier to work out where you are.
That bugged me. Like, me and Johnny both went, fucking put that screwdriver away. Any other doctor would have gone, oh, he's wearing such and such uniform.
Such and such a weapon. Look at those flags.
Yeah, oh, we're in the Crimea.
Right. But, or
done that, yeah.
That's like the doctor has literally done...
Yeah.
Jodie's doctor has done that before.
Put this bloody screwdriver away.
Oh my God, if you'd broken that, I would have been really upset. It's not mine, but I just think... So waste the money. Question. The TARDIS managed to get through the Lipari defences before the flux consumed it.
Yes.
So it's trapped behind the protective shield. But can it still travel in time? It's the same thing. That it's like, I'm not buying the whole... you know, they mentioned the 3-minute eclipse later on.
Yeah.
And stuff like that. I've got no indication, I've got no gauge for like how long this has been going on for.
Yeah.
You know, nobody's reacted to the Lupari being there.
Yeah.
That just feels way too tangential. And it's like, well, we need to protect Earth because we need to keep coming back to Earth.
Yeah.
So how many planets are we actually going to visit this year? Is it Earth and Time? And then maybe Gallifrey eventually?
Yeah.
Because I thought, okay, you know, it's shot under COVID regs. Does it make sense to just set every story on Earth and you just contain Earth?
Oh, maybe.
And everything, you fix the flux in that bubble.
Potentially.
So you've got kind of a space to work in sort of thing.
But
I mean, obviously we're on this other planet as well, so.
Yeah.
I don't know. Maybe that was a workaround for why they keep coming back to Earth to do things or whatever, but. It just is not enough going on there for me.
Yeah, there were a few sort of leaps of logic with this that I didn't quite buy. Like, it's only a really ridiculous things, nitpicky things.
Mm.
But like, when Dan wakes up, he's like, oh, 1 minute I was on your TARDIS. And I was like, hang on a minute, you've only just heard what a TARDIS is.
Yeah.
You wouldn't be that familiar with the word TARDIS.
I've dealt with a lot of aliens these last couple of days.
Yeah, like,
surely it's been a matter of hours.
Yeah, this is the thing. I didn't buy that. You know, I don't buy the fact that Dan just seems incredibly comfortable with all this very quickly.
I don't mind that.
I
don't mind that for the sake of the fact that it's a 6-episode miniseries.
Yeah,
and
I can see why they've done it.
It needs to crack on.
Yeah.
And I think he can get away with it because he is so amiable.
Yeah.
And he does just take things in his stride because that's just his attitude.
Yeah.
I don't mind that so much, but I can see why that might be a nitpicky thing for some people, yeah.
And the only other thing was that bit in the car when he's talking to his mum and dad and she's like, what's the probic vent? Even if some bloke did fucking knock one out over why would he know it was called a probic vent?
I know. I guess we just need, the fans just need to hear probic vent. Because it gets obviously mentioned later on.
I mean, if
you just have one word for everybody to describe the thing, because I think it might get confusing if people go hole in the back of the neck. Is that the same thing as the probic vent they mentioned earlier? I don't know.
Yeah.
You know?
See, I just thought, oh, just call it like hole in the back of the neck, and then the doctor go, oh, the probic vent, blah, blah, blah.
Yeah,
and that'd be it.
What did you think of Mary Seacole in this story?
Yeah, she was good.
I think she got like massively sidelined.
She did a bit,
like,
didn't she?
Like she didn't do anything in the middle of the story.
Yeah.
And then when she does join the action again.
Yeah.
She has maybe 2 or 3 lines of dialogue in that Sontaran ship.
Yeah.
And obviously it's just, like, she may as well not be there for that scene. Like,
yeah.
The Doctor may as well have sent her back to the British Hotel to work on the soldiers.
Yeah.
But then you also need that reassurance from her that the Doctor is reacting to what the Colonel or the Brigadier General or whatever did in that moment to blow up the Sontaran ships, which was a nice little sort of Pertwee Brig sort of like conflict thing.
Yeah, I thought that was good.
I thought the actor was great, and Mary Seacole being in the story was really cool. But I think it does speak to a wider thing in this series, that it does feel like we're getting series 11 and series 12 episodes. That and I wrote it on Twitter that Swarm and Azure and Passenger have kind of crashed the party.
Yeah.
And that scene, I'm going to skip right to the end because I was really want to talk about that scene where Yaz meets Swarm for the first time.
Yeah.
Because watching it live, I was just like, this is like they've been having fun and games for the last 2 years. Mm. All the adventures that the 13th Doctor's gone on with Graham and Ryan and Yaz have been fun and games. And now they're actually coming up against something that is a legitimate threat. Mm. It's like they've walked in from another TV show.
Yeah.
And they've gone, playtime's over.
Yeah.
We are going to start killing people and doing really, really horrible things. Yeah. And it was just, that scene was electrifying. Mm. And it speaks a lot to the performance of, I forget his name, Paul...
Sam Spruill?
Sam Spruill, yeah. His screen presence is something else.
Yeah.
Underneath all those prosthetics as well.
Yeah. Every time, like, I wasn't expecting him to show up in this story. Not really. I just thought, I think at the time I was just so in on the Sontarans. Mm. So then when he appeared, I went, ooh.
Brilliant.
Easier.
Yeah.
And every time him and Azure, whenever they're on screen, you are just hooked. They are so good.
Mesmerizing.
Yeah.
And the fact that, I don't know if this speaks to the priest triangles being quite cool as like a design and affable in their kind of vocal performance, or if it's that they're so evil that when Azure disintegrates that first thing, I was like, that she might as well have actually killed like any other character on screen. And we don't really know these things. We've been on this world for 40 minutes. Don't really care. It's a mechanical character that spouts dialogue.
Yeah.
But when both times they were killed, it was like, you bastards.
Yeah. It was because it was so needless.
Yeah.
They're just wiping things out
for the sake of it.
Yeah.
And that's dangerous.
Yeah.
Because they could turn around to Dan at any point and just go bang.
Yeah, this is
and
it.
And Thanos the fuck out of him and he's gone.
You know, he had Yaz's face there. And
touches a Doctor's companion like that.
Yeah.
Especially these days as well.
Especially these days. Yeah, it's just...
And her response to him as well was like a proper, get your hands off
me. Yeah.
And he's not... He'll kill you. He doesn't care. Yeah. It's so good.
Yeah. I mean, I put it on Twitter. I think, and I said it to Johnny and he agreed, I think they are the best Doctor Who villains we've had since the 80s.
Should we say Shara's Jack?
Jack, that's what I said to Johnny. I said, I can't think of a baddie that is on sort of
just
on par.
Absolutely electrifying. Every single time they're on screen, you soak up every line of dialogue.
Yeah. I think a few people just on Twitter didn't quite understand what I meant because they were like, oh, what about the Weeping Angels? No, they're monsters.
Yeah.
These are villains.
These
are proper people that the Doctor can have a dialogue with and a confrontation with.
Obviously, the Master is on like another level. But you're like, I'm putting this above the Rani.
Yeah.
I'm putting this above any one-shot deal villain that was actually quite impressive.
Bollocks to it. I think Swarm is better than the Master in the new series, full stop.
Yeah.
Probably in most of 80s Doctor Who.
I take Swarm over Anthony Ainley's performance as the Master.
The
Ainley incarnation, as much as we love that character. I mean, I don't know what's happening though. I don't know what's happening. Have we been without Doctor Who through the pandemic for so long? No, it's not that. That discredits the show.
Yeah, no, it's not that. It's just here we have two incredibly well-written characters, very, very well performed, fantastically designed.
Yeah,
and
everything about them works.
Yeah. I love the flamboyance of them. You know, their costumes are ridiculously ornate.
I didn't quite get one of the poses that Swarm did against the Zero when he was zipping it, and he's kind of just burying his crotch in her. I didn't quite get that.
No, I
did say in the first episode, maybe in this podcast, maybe we said it afterwards, there's a bit of like a... are they like banging each other? Like,
probably. Yeah. Probably. I know they're sisters. They're brother and sister.
I know. That's what I mean.
Oh, fuck.
Is there like a weird thing going on between them?
Well, maybe. Who knows?
Fully just thrusts his crotch into Azur when he's like warping around all over
the place.
Who knows?
It's an alien civilization. Anything goes.
I mean, maybe sister means something different on their planet.
Maybe.
Unless they're
going. I mean, they said there's like swarm and Azur are translations. They said that.
Ah, yeah. Yeah. And passenger.
Passenger, yeah.
I feel like that is such a different kind of name apart from them.
Mm.
And they mention translations. It's like, so are we going to like find out what their actual names are in the end?
Yeah.
Who do you think Passenger is? Passenger's come out of nowhere.
Yeah.
And a lot of people are saying, I feel like we've missed the scene where Passenger sort of joins them.
Mm.
And obviously, the first time we saw Passenger, and the only time we've seen Passenger in promotional material or on location or in promo images, was the stuff that was recorded in Liverpool, which involved John Bishop outside one of the big cathedrals in Liverpool. I think that's Di.
Oh, shit. What?
Who was the last person we saw them with?
Oh, my God.
And they've warped out of that cave, done something, we're going to have fun with you, done something really fucked up with her.
Oh,
and that's,
Billy.
And that's Di.
If you haven't knocked that the nail on the head... If that's not true, I'll give you a fiver.
Because when somebody said on Twitter, we haven't seen the scene that introduces Passenger.
My God.
I'm like, I think we have. I think we saw that scene last week.
God, you clever bastard.
I just think it's so weird that the one character thread that didn't get continued from last week, and it was one of the last scenes set on Earth before the big cataclysmic... It was the last time we saw Azur and Swarm was that. And... They're wearing the same outfits, roughly. I think there has been a change in costume for Swarm, maybe. He seems like he's wearing more regal sort of clothing.
It's the same outfit that he wore
the same
when
outfit.
He... Yeah, yeah.
Oh, okay, fine.
I mean, he was wearing like overalls, wasn't
maybe
he, when he was
just,
in prison?
Yeah, okay, fine. Maybe it's just the lighting or something, I don't know. But I think Di is Passenger.
That is a really good idea.
And I just, like... You know, we don't know what was being shot in Liverpool, but the fact the only other scene we've seen Passenger involved in is with John Bishop's character. I think there's something going on with Di and Passenger. And that will be like a really crushing revelation.
And I think
it will be like totally irreversible or something mad like that.
Yeah, and it makes sense. Why else would that character be wearing a mask that would be easily removable?
She's grown quite a lot.
Yeah, but we don't know what. I mean, if they can disintegrate people, why not, remolecularize their bodies to, grow mass or whatever?
And it wasn't.
And an extra arm.
I was going to say. Maybe, obviously equal opportunity casting, and, you want as diverse a cast as possible because it's representative of the UK, believe it or not, to have disabled people in your programme. But maybe there's some kind of bargaining chip there or something. I don't know. Maybe we're reading that into that too much. But I just think, there's something about that fact that that was the last time we saw Di.
Yeah.
I think Passenger might be Di.
I think you might have got it there.
That's my theory, folks. Wow. Take it with a grain of salt. Also, the Temple of Atropos.
Yeah, that's it.
I Googled it. Atropos.
Right. Oh, yeah.
So, the Mori, as like a name, I think it's pronounced Mori.
Mm.
Are nicked wholesale from ancient Greek religion
right.
and mythology.
Okay.
Right? So they are incarnations of destiny. It was difficult to take it in because it's so ethereal. And it's not like in the Bible where it's like, that means good or bad. There's lots of, areas in between. They're incarnations of destiny. They direct the lives and death of humans and gods. In Greek mythology, Atropos is one of the three fates.
Right.
This name means unalterable or unturnable, a metaphor for death. So the first fate, the spinner, spins the thread of life. The allotter, the second one, as in drawing someone's lot, measures the thread of life attached to each person. And finally, Atropos, the inevitable, cuts the thread of life, choosing the manner of each person's death. And if Chris Chibnall is actually very good at conjuring up alien names and terms, very much like Russell T. Davis when, that Dan Starkey Sontaran mentions the Shadow Proclamation and he reads out the writ sort of thing. He's very good at that. that I don't think he would have just gone through list of Greek names and gone, but
yeah,
he could have come up with something completely different. And yeah. I think the fact that Atropos actually means something, and it's, you know, the whole destiny, cutting someone's line, death,
yeah,
that kind of thing, I kind of feel like it might be linked to something like that. But there's nothing really else in the story to get a grip on.
Yeah.
Where you're like, oh, that is an inference, that is a direct reference or whatever.
That's really interesting that you should say that about Chris Chibnall's way of coming up with alien things. Because watching that last night and seeing the little pyramid-y thing and seeing the Maori stood there, I thought to myself, this version of Doctor Who feels far more, it feels far more accepting of showing alien stuff than perhaps Moffat or Russell T Davies ever
I think that is the absolute strength of this run so far.
Yeah.
Everything actually feels alien.
It's more like classic Who, really,
where
you would get weird things. Whereas I think with Moffat and Russell, there was an element of playing it a bit safe, where every alien race was like, oh, well, we're sort of we're human.
Yeah.
And we sort of...
We're all from that colony.
Yeah,
it's
you
all
know,
Earth it's, colonies. Yeah, it's all, not like there is a planet where people are just clouds or whatever.
Yeah, you know? And I think, you know, they kind of tried to do it in Rings of Akaten, and obviously that was all a bit of a cock-up. But here, yeah, you know, you think, oh, okay, this is very, very alien, very sci-fi.
Mm.
It feels like Doctor Who really accepting its sci-fi roots in a way that
I think
haven't
you're right.
seen it in the past.
I think that starts with the Ghost Monument. I think there's enough in there that's different visually.
Yeah.
The fact that, you know, the villains aren't, you know, bipeds.
No.
They aren't sort of like weird alien creatures based on something on Earth.
Yeah.
They're rags.
Yeah.
And that's such a... it's not that kind of... It is a classic Who.
Yeah.
In that it's really stretching the limits of someone's imagination to design something like that. But it's also not classic Who in that I don't feel, with the exception of the Weeping Angel scene in last week's episode, there isn't really anything earthly that you think, I could bump into that in the middle of the street.
Yeah.
You know, we seeing aliens running around at night in a built-up suburban area...
Yeah.
That scene with the Sontarans singularly failing to hit anything
that was ridiculous.
Importance was
that
great.
Is so stupid.
Proper
like,
stormtroopers. It was great.
Sake, there was like six or nine of them.
I know.
And we're like, what? What's going on?
It was brilliant. But when they're in battle, they can blast those.
Yeah, they killed all those men.
Yeah. That was fine.
One feckin' bloke running down an alley, and then they all disappeared.
They all disappeared, and then they didn't check that car with all the condensation down the windows as they went past. I've completely lost my train of thought. Fuck, where was I?
Aliens.
Aliens.
I mean, Doctor Who.
Yeah.
We can't really... It was...
When I see, like, that running around suburban streets in the middle of the night, I just think of Stolen Earth, Journey's End.
Yeah,
because I think that Russell's Who, in terms of aliens and threats, did kind of typify alien invasion, incursion in the 21st century.
Yeah.
Stevens is a lot more cerebral. It's a lot more metaphorical. And Chibnall's is like the slightly twisted and I don't recognise that as anything earthly. And that's what makes it frightening. If you were dropped on Desolation, you wouldn't have a clue what to do.
Yeah.
Because the sand can kill you. The sea is made of acid.
Yeah.
And it's that kind of Terry Nation way of like everything is deadly. And you need to be really careful. It's a frightening universe, and anything could kill. What does Ford Prefect say? Everything's trying to do you, kill you, rip you off. You know, it feels like a dangerous universe in Chris Chibnall's Who. But I'm really glad you picked up on the alienness of it all.
Yeah,
that was really cool.
Yeah, and I like that. I think it feels like it's not afraid to be a science fiction series. Yeah, and be weird.
Be strange and look a bit odd.
Yeah. Because, you know, we used to get all that kind of crap in old Doctor Who all the time.
Exactly. What did you think of Jodie having that time by herself to be in that story? And maybe just the way that they got rid of Yaz and Dan.
Yeah, I think that really helped her. I think it just allowed her Doctor to breathe and be the Doctor.
Mm.
Get on and do stuff and, you know, suss out the problem and come up with solutions and all those things you want the Doctor to do.
Mm.
It worked really well. It worked in her favour.
I agree. And then there was a weird bit where I thought, my God, you're doing so well. Why is this happening again? when Dan's parents are introduced.
Yeah.
And I thought, he can't help himself but to add as many characters as possible to a scene. It, you know, it could have been that Dan had a single parent or whatever, but we've got to have the nuclear family sort of thing. And I saw somebody pointing out on Twitter as a nitpick that apparently the actor playing Dan's mum is actually younger than John Bishop.
Really?
Apparently.
What?
Yeah, apparently. But then Jodie Whittaker's playing like a 9,000-year-old Time Lord or whatever, so, you know, that's kind of a moot point.
Yeah, how old is Doctor Who now?
I don't know. I think, like, the official, like, breakdown on the BBC, like, canonically has her as, like, 5,000 or 6,000 years old.
Is it?
It's a single-digit thousand number, I think.
Gur old.
Well, yeah. Old, like.
Well old.
I did kind of worry. I was like, oh, God, like, we've just been given the opportunity to breathe and we've just got rid of a massive TARDIS team.
Yeah.
I don't need to see, you know, three more people on screen exchanging dialogue. But they weren't in it for that long.
No.
They were quite funny.
I liked them.
And it was it was actually really enjoyable. Yeah. So, you know, even that kind of thing where usually you can kind of slap Christian's hands and go, like, that is enough.
Yeah.
Actually worked fine in this story. Yeah. So what is it that's working here that hasn't worked before? Is it that the story just has a bit more peril? It's a bit bigger?
Yeah, maybe it's that. You know, I don't know. It's just been really good, hasn't it? The stakes are higher.
Mm-hmm.
But, I mean, even if you took away the Azure and Swarm stuff and all the Flux stuff, like the Sontaran stuff alone was really bloody good.
Mm-hmm.
You know, all the stuff with John Bishop, with Dan. I really like Dan. Yep. Dan's good fun.
Yeah. Carvanista's back.
Carvanista's
back. That was like a nice yay moment.
Yeah, you know? He's good. I love their relationship they've got going on.
It's like, it's Han Solo and Chewie.
It is Han Solo.
Scouse, Han Solo and Chewie.
Yeah. It's just good characters.
Yeah.
I think the characters are just really good and likeable.
I suppose, while Vinda hasn't had a lot to do.
No.
I did think that he intervened at the right time with that, you know, when he pulled his gun out. I thought, this isn't out of character. He's obviously gone for his gun earlier.
Yeah.
And that's the first indication that we see he's armed.
Mm.
So he obviously needs that weapon for something day to day.
Yeah.
Do we think we're not really any closer to finding out who he is, but did you think any more of his character and what he might be?
Are
we still thinking Division agent?
Possibly Division. Division is the only thing that springs to mind, because they're being very coy about who he is.
Yeah. They've literally not said anything.
They've not said anything. So I assume it's going to be Division related.
Outpost Rose wasn't mentioned this week.
No. Because something gets said about... Oh, he says... He refers to his home planet.
Yeah.
And I thought... Have you said that deliberately because you're going to turn around and say, I'm from Gallifrey,
yeah. He's disgraced. Disgraced and discharged and all that kind of stuff.
Yeah.
And, like...
That sounds like the sort of shit the Time Lords would do. They exile people all the time.
They exile people all the time. And he's been exiled onto that station to do that job because he's done something in the past that has disgraced him.
Yeah. And they've just said, well, we're just going to stick you on this ship.
As penance, basically.
Yeah, and you're just going to look at stars for the rest of your natural.
That's pretty good.
Yeah.
You know, like, that's a nice setup for a character, because then he might... Well, he's seen it all. He wants to get out there and do it and all that kind of stuff. But it does sort of... In that final scene, which we'll obviously get to, the cliffhanger, with Yaz, I think we have one shot of him with the makeup on.
Yeah.
Obviously, all the tension is rightly on Yaz because, you know, she's one of the long... She'll be one of the longest-serving companions, at least for the new series, I think. Really weird to kind of see him ignored in that sequence. Like, I think Dan's kind of stood on that side of the room, but Dan doesn't really seem to be engaging in this situation either.
No.
That was the only sort of thing I could nitpick about the cliffhanger, which we'll get to, but obviously was brilliant. One other little scene that I really liked, Williamson in this story. Were you expecting him to pop up?
No, I wasn't. I was surprised. And then it sort of, because I remember last week, you know, I turned around and said, oh, he didn't need to be in this. But then obviously he popped up again. I was like, oh, okay.
So he is more important.
So there is a thread there. Now, we know that he's making these tunnels. He's building these tunnels under Liverpool.
Mm-hmm.
And obviously where they were was sort of quite labyrinthine anyway.
Yeah.
And I'm sure he said something about, oh, it all keeps shifting.
Yeah.
Now, do we think that the tunnels that he's building has somehow linked to this planet on time, and maybe he was just walking through his tunnels and I've just ended up here?
Possibly.
Maybe not in the same way, whereas Yaz and Vinda were teleported or whatever.
Yeah, because they see... Well, I suppose because they're all from very separate parts of time, the inference is they've been drawn together in the same way. Same thing has brought... the flux.
Yeah.
The flux has drawn them together. But I just think until I get a bit more context on the flux and what its rules are, what it does... That's again difficult for me to sort of pin down,
because I think this Williamson bloke must be aware of the flux. He may not know what it is, but obviously he said in the last episode something about
there's a cataclysm,
and all this stuff.
Yeah.
It's that.
I'd like to say, the guy who's playing Williamson, I think played that scene with Yaz really, really well.
Yeah.
Because you can tell before he even kind of questions her, he knows he's not in his own time.
Yeah.
So there is some understanding that he could possibly move between, time and space. So he obviously knows a little bit more than he's letting on, or that we suspected he would know about that sort of stuff.
Yeah.
But I just thought that way that they played that scene, and Yaz and Amanda Gill's performance, she's obviously channeling the police officer thing and calls him sir.
Yeah.
And Chris Chibnall does write kind of historical dialogue quite well. Like, I like his use of language. It's very Bob Holmes, isn't it?
He likes
using those kind of Victorian terms.
Yeah, whereas I think maybe Russell and Stephen didn't really do that so much. They were just like, we'll just write them as normal modern people.
Yeah, because Shakespeare's equivalent would have been shut your big fat mouths.
You know,
it would have been that sort of thing.
Yeah, but I prefer the Chibnall way of doing it.
It makes it feel like you're in a different place. It doesn't make you feel like you're walking down, Old Market on a Saturday night. What would the Doctor do? Did you like that?
I like that, yeah.
I can see people getting that tattooed. I think that's something that this iteration of the show is given.
Yeah.
That the Russell and Moffat eras were good at generating sort of like Tumblr memes for.
Yeah.
And, besides the Thasmin shipping, I don't think there's been a lot for people to sort of latch onto as like an iconic bit of that show.
Yeah.
I think we're going to get a lot of that from this season, but I think that is a big one.
Yeah.
I think that one's going to go down quite well.
Yeah. And going back to what you said about Yaz and her police training.
Yeah.
I like that's sort of come into the fray a little bit more. I mean, only very slightly.
Yeah.
But it's nice to be reminded of, this is what her day job was.
Exactly.
She knows how to walk into a situation like
There's
this.
A lot more that could have been done with that, though.
Yeah.
When the trailer for Resolution came out and that police car chase scene or whatever we thought it was popped up, and we thought, Yaz is going to be able to do something cool and like an action set piece. And she hasn't really had that. We haven't seen the physical side of her police training coming in. But we don't really need to, I guess. She's basically a PCSO, isn't she?
Yeah, it's a shame, really, because you think, again, this was the issue I had was that there were too many companions.
Yeah.
And you sort of think of how many situations where her ability to walk into a room and be like, right, okay,
let's settle this, let's sort this out. What's happened here?
How good would that have been? Especially, the Doctor could have been like, Yaz, sort this lot out. I'm going off over here to get on with this.
But that's why their balance works. Because the Doctor isn't particularly good at talking to people anyway. Yeah. And so you need somebody there to do... You do the small talk. You know how to talk to humans sort of thing. And I think that's where Yaz did shine in this story, is that kind of like she's actually taking command of a situation. For the first time, really. The first time that I can think of where she's actually commanded a moment.
Yep.
And I'm sure there have been smaller moments, but for a large portion of this episode, of course, she's on her own. And so seeing her almost, playing the Doctor, she's pretending to be the Doctor. And I think that you buy that she's managed to... I mean, she can fly the TARDIS. She can co-pilot it at the very least.
Yeah.
So I think that even though it was shaky ground for Yasmin Khan to begin with and her tenure with the programme, I think that she will end up... When she does eventually leave, I think it will be a... She would have been a really good foundation for this run as a companion.
Yeah.
And I think that, Mandip Gill is obviously a great performer, but I think she will have fully grown into that part come the time of next year's centenary special.
Yeah.
I did find that bit about the flux, the line of dialogue, from the Doctor. The Doctor doesn't believe the fallout from the Flux is powerful enough to change history so much.
Right.
Like Russia and China becoming Sontar on the map. Mm. That was a great moment.
That was really cool.
I thought it was really lovely timing.
Yeah.
It's like, I know when it pans across, there's going to be something that's not there. But yeah. I was not expecting China and Russia to be gone.
Yeah.
That was really cool. But she doesn't get to the bottom of the course here, and her musings on it, when she's like, blah, 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 blah. The 13th Doctor does a lot of that.
Yeah.
And I've been trained over the last 2 years that actually what she's saying doesn't matter, it's technobabble. Mm. But I'm now actually trying to follow the meaning of this, because every bit of information we get about the Flux, or every bit of information that they deduce, is important to the context of the show. So now when the Doctor does do all that technobabble stuff, it is taking two or three rewatches for me to go, like, I'm grounded in it now, I get what this is.
I'm just thinking about going back to the Maori and their influence on time.
Yeah.
If they are damaged, and this little pyramid creature, whatever they're called, turned around and said something like, oh, time is evil, and it goes after its own.
Yeah.
Is this why the TARDIS is being cocked up? Because the TARDIS is connected to time.
Right.
And so it's now being affected in a bad way.
Mm.
Perhaps this is tied into how the Sontarans were able to do it, because time is being cocked up because the planet time is
going,
you know? So perhaps it's not necessarily connected to the Flux, like the Doctor said, but perhaps there is a why it's connected to this other strand of the story.
How many sides are there of a TARDIS console?
Six. Oh, there's six of those things, isn't there, in the temple? Oh, shit.
And it's like a platform.
Yes.
I think there's about enough room in the middle of that to have a police box land or a Type 40 type capsule land in the middle of it. What if they are the original like engines of time travel?
Yeah.
And they can, if they're conduits and they can process the force and the energy of time,
they are like
a literal Eye of Harmony or they're like a time rotor or whatever. Like maybe, I just feel like the number of them and the sides of them that aren't working.
Yeah.
I'm sure it's not like a pattern that we'll have to remember which ones aren't working.
Yeah.
But there's elements of this that I'm thinking might seem superficial, but are actually quite important.
I think it must be
important.
All connected, yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, I think it's been very clever. Mm. If that is the case, because it does seem like after Swarm kills, because he killed two of them.
He kills two of them to replace them with Vinda and Yaz.
Yeah, and then when we next see the TARDIS, you've got these weird spikes growing out and the oozy stuff.
They have died by that point, haven't they?
So then we see that the TARDIS is even more cocked up.
And he says, terrible for the TARDIS.
He did, didn't he? Yes.
So that specifically is affecting the TARDIS for some reason.
Yeah.
Maybe it is just something to do with time.
Mm.
But I do think maybe this is being written in a way. And I don't know necessarily if shows are written specifically to this end.
Right.
Where we all on Twitter, 2 weeks after the show's finished, go, it was there the whole time.
Yeah,
it's been mentioned.
Yeah.
Or like, did you guys notice, like, you know, a week before the finale, that this number of things corresponds to this number of things?
Mm.
I think there might be a moment or two like that
in
this run that kind of make us go, whoa. Because the whole, you know, it didn't pan out the way that it was expected to, but the whole Find the Doctor thing is almost kind of training you to connect dots and to see patterns in things. And I'm sure there'll be a reveal or two that, for the people paying attention, will really hit home.
Yeah.
You know, maybe not to a whole audience, but it might give you an indication of what's to come or a big reveal or something.
I think this would be a good serial to go back and watch once the last episode is aired. It'll be good to go back and watch it and go, yes, okay, so now I can really follow this thread. And that was, like you
exactly.
said, that was there. Yeah.
I think this brings us on to a really important conversation, because this is the first time we've seen a continuation.
Mm.
Do we just do Doctor Who like this now?
Yeah, bloody do it.
It's so good.
It's so nice ending with a cliffhanger every week.
And it means that. Yeah. We'll talk about the cliffhanger.
Yeah.
It's probably the best cliffhanger of the new series, I think, for impact.
Yeah.
For like a proper kind of like, shit, I've got to, like, is Yaz dead?
Yeah.
Radio Times, your clickbait articles are bullshit. That whole thing about next time trailers are ruining what's gonna, like, it's like you know, the fourth Doctor being pulled apart in the Leisure Hive.
Yeah, all right.
Tom Baker will be back next week.
And that's part of the fun of the show is that we know that everything's going to be all right, but how is it going to happen?
Exactly.
Yeah. How do they get out of this one?
Exactly.
That's the fun.
That's the fun of it. That is the cliffhanger is the how is that going to get resolved?
Exactly.
And a thank you to everybody who commented, who doesn't follow me, who let me know that between 1963, I don't know if you knew this, between 1963 and 1989, Doctor Who was serialised.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
Gosh, I didn't know that.
It's not like I've watched every episode of the show, you know.
Who the freak was saying this to you?
Multiple people who don't, because that tweet I did got quite a few retweets, I think, and I think people who don't follow me were getting it pop up on their feed, or they were searching for Doctor Who or something. And it was like, thank you for pointing out to me that Doctor Who...
It's because you're young, Billy.
It's because I'm young, yeah. I couldn't have possibly watched
if you were grey.
Exactly, if I was a grey-haired man, I probably would have known better, obviously. But I think that this... Because you take a show like Stranger Things, you've got that setting, that conceit nailed down now.
Yeah.
You know the setup, the characters are going to be coming back every year,
you're
going to get the same kind of beats that you look for. It's going to, you know, in that kind of Doctor Who thing, you always want the cliffhanger, you always want the TARDIS reveal, you always want beauty shots of Daleks, you always want blah, 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 blah. I think that's why that whole this is the most Doctor Who-y feeling Doctor Who in a long time.
Mm.
I think it's coming from the fact that it's hitting those beats
every
week because the structure complements Doctor Who.
Yeah.
I know some people have said that they would prefer to have the odd standalone story, and I think you can. I don't know if this is the best example of being able to have a standalone story within a serial.
No.
Because I know the kind of standalone story people are talking about, and there was too much of the flux in this.
Yeah.
I think next week is going to be very flux heavy.
Yeah, I think if you were to do a standalone story in this serial, it would be like the Feast of Stephen in the Daleks Master Plan.
Exactly. It would have to be like a break from the action.
Yeah, and then you would have most of the audience going, why am I watching? I don't want to see this arson about. I want to see the actual story.
Which is why Doctor Who probably does work better in this format on a streaming service.
Yeah.
Because, oh, it's the filler episode. I can skip this one.
Yeah.
In the same way that, like, the X-Files would have Monster of the Week.
Yeah.
But if you... I've always wanted somebody to, like, compile a list of X-Files where, like, I need to watch this episode, and this episode for the story.
Yeah.
And then that one because it's a good Monster of the Week, or that one because it's a standout episode. But you could probably cut however many... What was it? 8 or 9 seasons of the X-Files? You could probably cut it down to a really tight 3 seasons or something.
Yeah.
If you cut out the filler stories.
Yeah.
And, you know,
and Buffy's the same. Buffy was the same, you know, that's Monster of the Week.
Exactly.
For a lot of it, unless you've got, like, arc-y stuff that's going on around it.
Exactly. And the arc when, you know, the reliance on the audience was to tune in week after week.
Yeah.
In the Russell T. Davis and the Stephen Moffat era, I think that Vote Saxon Torchwood thing works there.
Yeah.
Come back each week.
Yeah.
We'll give you a little bit more, but television channels and networks could rely on the audience being there every week.
Yeah.
I think what we'll see, hopefully, with the 28-day consolidated viewing figures is that people are viewing this in much the same way I think it's been produced for, which is the context you binge-watch this. Like my other half has been binge-watching you.
Mm.
You sit down, that's a serialised story.
Yeah.
Most Netflix dramas are
they
serials.
Are, yeah.
And I think that people don't really realise that that's the structure.
But it's the same
anyway.
With so much of television now.
I know.
You know, Game of Thrones, they always ended on a cliffhanger.
Mm-hmm.
Any drama, Vigil, this is something, you know, they all ended on a cliffhanger.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and you know, that felt very Doctor Who-y.
Yeah.
When you have a big cliffhanger, you're like, yeah, this is what Doctor Who needs. So for Doctor Who to now have it back, you know, like you said, it worked back in 2005 to have the Monster of the Week stories because that is how television was digested. But television has evolved and Doctor Who didn't move with it. Doctor Who is still doing these Monster of the Week stories. And, you know, it felt like, well, I can miss one and it won't matter. Whereas with this, you don't want to miss it because you've got a great hook and you know there is a very strong arc going throughout the whole story, more so than, say, Bad Wolf or, you know, that was like, ooh, what does it mean? What's the mystery? But this is like, shit, if I miss what's going on, I'm knackered.
And I think I mentioned this in another video recently, in the Matt Smith double bill, the complaint that I always got from friends who weren't Doctor Who fans but were casual members of the audience, the viewing public, the complaint I always got from them was, if I miss an episode, it's really hard to catch up.
Yeah.
And I think for maybe it's just a generational thing, but for a certain generation of viewer, that mystery box, vote sacks and Torchwood thing actually doesn't work.
Yeah.
And so if you do miss an episode of Series 6,
yeah,
in the middle of Series 6, I don't know how you're going to claw your way back into understanding it without watching it back.
Yeah.
And most people don't have the time or the energy or care enough about Doctor Who to go, I'll watch that on repeat, or should we watch that on catch-up tonight?
And I still don't understand Series 6, and I've watched it several times.
No. I think, but this is the thing. And then now I'm worried with Russell T Davies coming in that he'll throw out the baby with the bathwater.
Oh, I see, yeah.
And I'm worried that everybody's going to want it to be just like it was set up back then.
Yeah.
When what I think they should be doing is thanking Chris Chibnall, getting on their knees and thanking him and going, this is how Doctor Who is done now. Thank you very much. And, you know, if you can expand it to 10 episodes, I'll give you two standalone stories with no relation to the plot that are in the middle for a mid-series bump. There's your mid-series bump.
Yeah.
And I am slightly worried with this one, we're not going to get that. Because that's a lot to do with the promotion of the show.
Yeah.
And the fact we're getting episode titles quite close to the air dates.
Yeah.
So we can't predict necessarily. I mean, Village of the Angels.
Yeah.
That, you know, having a six-episode series, I think that the viewing figures, the overnights for this series, I think they're going to be quite disappointing.
You think, yeah.
Because I don't think that you can still promote the show in the way that Russell did, where you have that mid-series bump and that everybody knows, oh, by week six, there's a Dalek story.
Yeah.
Great, we can tune in for that one. This doesn't have that.
No.
The Cybermen are in next week's story.
Yeah.
You could slip them in the title, could have advertised it a bit earlier that they were going to be in it. Okay, we only knew during the next time trailer for this story that they're in it next week. I just think that mid-series bump and that way that Russell can tailor a show for publicity's sake, it's not there.
And I do wonder actually how much the Cybermen are going to be in it next week.
I don't think they're going to be in it.
I think it's going to be like because we keep seeing that same clip. I think it's just going to be like, oh, weird things from time and space are just come into this place. Oh, there's some Cybermen. Quick, run down this corridor.
Exactly.
Oh, delete, delete, delete. Mm-hmm. Oh, that's it. Mm-hmm. We went round the corner and they buggered off.
Exactly. Also, we've run out of stuff from that trailer.
We haven't seen the Ood yet.
Haven't seen the Ood, true.
But I think that's literally the only thing we possibly haven't seen.
I believe so. I'm sure somebody can...
Someone will tell us point that we're wrong. Out. But
A whip pan that we've missed.
Yeah. But I think,
I think everything's covered now, isn't it? So it's Once Upon Time next week.
Yeah.
Then it's...
of course, the planet is time.
It makes sense now. There we go. I thought he was conjuring that shit Christmas special. Or New Year's. Was it New Year's or Christmas special, that?
That was Christmas.
That's too depressing to be a Christmas story.
What was that called? Twice Upon a Time.
Twice Upon a Time, yeah. We'll do that next Christmas. I think they've nailed Doctor Who's format for going forward now.
Yeah.
I absolutely want this to be
I want the cliff.
Doctor
Keep
Who.
Those bloody cliffhangers.
I'm a bit miffed that it's just three specials next year.
Yeah, me too.
Because they can't be, they're too far apart
for it to be connected. Yeah.
They'll have to be standalone specials.
So I was saying this to Johnny, I think what will probably happen is, so we'll have this Flux.
Yep.
Which ends on, I think, the 5th of December.
Yep. Yeah.
And then we will have 1st of January, New Year's Day.
A special.
Special.
Yeah.
Dalek story. It'll be the last of the New Year's Dalek stories.
Yeah.
Because we know they've shot a Dalek story.
I really hope that... But in production... Hang on. In the production... When did they wrap? Because some of the last stuff they shot, wasn't it? Was for that Dalek story? Have they enough time to have finished shooting that stuff they were doing on the harbour? And cut it for New Year's.
I think this has been recorded in such a way that because it was all shot all at once, I don't think it... I think they've just been like, right, we're going to shoot a bit of this one.
Fine.
Bit of that one.
Okay.
You know, I don't... Yeah, I think...
Yeah.
It's just been... Especially with COVID.
Yeah.
However they could get around it. Because I was saying, funnily enough, I was having this conversation...
Well done to
with,
your production managers and production coordinators.
Watching that, every time I watched it this afternoon, I was thinking to myself, can I see that this was shot during COVID? No, not at all.
No.
Not at all. I haven't got a clue.
I know that you know, telly had special dispensation in a lot of respects, yeah. You know, and like, because I think it was the stuff they were filming on that beach that is yet to appear that involved a weeping angel and Jodie on a beach. There was that guy who took a photo and was like, none of the Doctor Who crew are social distancing.
I remember him, yeah.
But it's like, you know, they all would have taken,
and stuff,
they would have quarantined, they would have been in bubbles, they would have been in cohorts, they would have been doing two tests a week at the very least, because I'm still having to do like two or three COVID tests a week. And, you know, I've got a stinking cold, but, you know, I'm working in an environment where I get ill quite a lot for this show. It's just like, it's just a thing. And you just do COVID tests now. So they must have been doing COVID tests maybe twice a day at that point with no vaccine.
I mean, Dan Starkey said, oh, I had to have a COVID test in full Sontaran makeup. He's, you know, so they were doing what they had to do. They were following the rules and the guidelines.
All of the precautions, yeah.
You know, we haven't heard any stories of like, oh my God, Jodie Whittaker's got COVID from filming Doctor Who.
No.
You know, nothing like that.
No.
So it seems like it was incredibly safe. And yeah. Fair play to them. Amazing, incredible, actually, that they've been able to produce something this good with all that going on.
I think that's the other layer of it, isn't it? It's like they could have. It's like they've thrown absolutely everything at it. Is it a thing that we just have with the new series Doctors where their last seasons tend to get it right? I mean, series four. I mean, I take series three over series four.
Same. I know a lot of people really like series four, but I prefer series three.
Series 7, I take 5 over 7, but 7 is a marked improvement.
Improvement over 6.
And then 10 is the best of Capaldi's run.
Yeah, you get 10 is good. You have,
so,
you
so
have
2, a, out, you, 2 out of 4, 50-50.
Yeah, 10's good. You get that Monk trilogy, which is poo. And then you have that Eaters of Light, which is poo. But otherwise, a strong series, generally speaking. But, and especially for the Doctor, Capaldi had found his feet in that series. Not just him, but the writers had found the balance
between him being a bastard and him being very amiable and charming and grandfatherly. And
And then obviously it seems like with this series, they've done the same with Jodie.
Yeah.
But God damn it, keep those bloody cliffhangers. Because it's so good. It just felt like proper Doctor Who.
Yeah.
I was just sat there thinking, this feels like an old Doctor Who story.
Mm-hmm. It's the most Doctor Who-y Doctor Who has felt.
Yeah.
And every comment that I've seen from people, you know, everybody's basically been saying, it feels like Doctor Who when I watched it.
Yeah.
The majority of the replies I was getting to some of the tweets that I did last night were people who don't have Doctor Who as their profile photos, have never expressed an interest in Doctor Who apparently in the last, like, 2 years of them tweeting.
Yeah, yeah.
If they've not tweeted much, I'll just scan through it and see if they've tweeted anything. These are genuine members of the public who are searching for Doctor Who on Twitter because they caught it last night, who are saying it's really good and this is the best that it's been for as long as they could remember.
Yeah.
So it's not just us Doctor Who fans that think this is really good. The NMDs love it. And that is quite something. I mean, they're not going to be happy that Jodie Whittaker's on screen, but whenever she appears on screen, they're, you know, what is left of their manhood shrivels inside of them. It's just this bizarre thing where there is no denying this is really good.
Yeah.
It's just quality stuff.
Yeah.
It's quality television. And it, you know, it's such a relief that it's just positive.
And it's quite nice watching it with my mum because
you know,
she's not a Doctor Who
fan.
One of my favourite anecdotes about watching Doctor Who is watching The Claws of Axos, that bit when there's the Axon in the nuclear reactor and he's on all fours and he's sort of going...
When it goes all slow motion.
Yeah, and it's like flopping around on the floor. I remember my mum walked in and she was like, that's just a man in a duvet, that's ridiculous. It's like, that's just so stupid. I was like, oh, mum.
You've ruined it.
But, you know, even she watched it and she said, gosh, she said, that was really good. She's, you know, she was like, that was one of the best in a long, long time. She said, I can't remember when Doctor Who was last as good as it was tonight. And she said, and last week. She enjoyed last week's as well.
My other half has only been introduced to Doctor Who through Jodie's run.
Yeah.
And, you know, much the same as you, I'm sure. I mean, maybe it was just me last night because I was exhausted. But I was watching the telly with my mouth open when that last sort of last segment was happening.
Yeah.
And when Swarm vaporised that first Maury.
Yeah.
And I just turned to her and I said, they're bastards. And it was just this proper, I can't wait for them to get their comeuppance. And I think this comes back to exactly what you said at the start. Doctor Who is only as good, or a Doctor.
Yeah.
Let's just say Doctor Who as a whole.
Yeah.
It's only as good as its villains.
Yeah.
You know, you think, when have the peaks of Doctor Who been?
Mm.
It's been, you know, the early 60s, Dalek Mania.
Yeah.
It's been the, you know, the incredible cavalcade of monsters you get in the 70s.
Mm.
Every episode, it's a different incredible alien creature.
Yeah.
In the 80s, genuinely, with the exception of Daleks, Cybermen and the Master, Sharaz Jek.
Yeah.
There's not that much.
No.
Tractators.
Yeah.
Pteroleptils.
Yeah.
A lot of T's. You know, Tetraps.
Tetraps,
there's a lot of T's in there. And I'm not discrediting or saying any of that stuff's rubbish.
No.
I'm just saying that when Doctor Who feels like it's at its best, it's when it's got villains like Swarm and Azur and Passenger. Yeah. And a setup like this.
Yeah.
And I cannot wait for next week and the week after and the week after.
Yeah.
Although I did say before I left, the tragedy of enjoying Doctor Who.
I saw that
is,
tweet.
You know, it could take one line of dialogue or one scene and the whole thing falls apart.
Yeah.
Watching those Matt Smith episodes, you know, I'm enjoying this one line of dialogue that I remember ruined.
Cocked it up, yeah.
Ruined. Oh, that didn't get wrapped up. Ruined.
Yeah.
Every time when I watch this back, when I see Williamson, am I going to be going, what was that about?
Mm.
And I'm, you know, that is the fear.
Yeah.
Because we're so conditioned to Doctor Who having elements of it that you can nitpick to the nth degree.
Yeah.
But actually things that haven't quite worked.
Yeah.
But this is Doctor Who firing on all cylinders here. And you just desperately don't want it to drop the ball.
No.
And I mean, is there anything else you can think of to say?
I don't know. It just I'm loving it. I'm absolutely loving it. This is the first time in a long time where there is a childlike buzz for me watching Doctor Who again.
I haven't had that for a decade.
You know, there's always that trepidation, I think, when you have a favourite thing where, and especially Doctor Who, where you go into it and you think, oh, please let this be a good one.
Mm.
And then if it ends up being a bit of a damp squib, you're like, oh.
It's really disappointing.
It's disappointing,
isn't it?
And you're like, oh. But at the moment, you know, it has surpassed my expectations. Mm. I didn't expect, you know, the Sontarans this week, they were fantastic. Chris Chibnall, if I ever meet you, I just want to say, you bloody wonderful man, you fixed the Sontarans. I didn't think it was possible.
No.
I thought the Sontarans were cocked up forever.
I suppose it does go to prove, though, that can't be the case.
That can't be the case.
It's always going to come round again.
And I kept saying, he's done it with the Daleks.
He did it with
the Daleks.
He's done it with the Cybermen.
He's done it with
his
Cybermen.
His treatment of classic villains is exceptional.
Yeah.
Because he knows what makes them tick.
Yeah.
Imagine him writing an Ice Warrior story.
Oh, my God.
Think about a monster that has been done by the Silurians, probably the only time he's not quite nailed it. But
even
then,
one had a lot of problems, didn't it?
But I don't think that was down to him.
And I don't think that was down to him. Yeah, so I think that had a lot of issues, that story. And obviously budgetary issues. You know, I would imagine that when he wrote it, he was thinking of Silurians proper. Not how it ended up, ultimately. So, crikey, bloody hell, if you're going to do a classic Doctor Who story, Russell, classic monster, Chris in, because he's doing bloody good stuff.
I was thinking, you know, when Stephen left, the last thing you want to hear is, Chris is getting Stephen to write a story.
Yeah.
Because I you know, it's nothing against Stephen personally, it's just I was so done with that style of writing.
Yes.
And I was so convinced that every single time he's going to come back and do something for the show, it's just going to be, look at me, it's Stephen Moffat writing an episode of Doctor Who. Because he can't help himself.
Mm.
For better or worse, he can't help himself.
He has a very particular style.
Yeah.
And it's not a Doctor Who thing. It is known to anyone who watches any of his programmes.
Yeah.
Because you could not have ever seen Doctor Who.
No.
But you could have watched Sherlock, and if I said, oh, well, that's Stephen Moffat-y, a person who watches Sherlock
would
know
exactly what that is.
Same with Dracula.
Yeah.
So it's just, that is just him.
It's his thing.
So
this is the thing. Russell, if you get Chris back in, you get him to do classic monster stories. Mm. You also get him to do historicals.
Yeah, he's
because
good at
he's also rescued the historical.
Yeah.
And, you know, probably, you know, you need to have a historical story. It's about time travel. You need these characters going back to the past. But I think that the historical stories have generally been treated with a bit of contempt. Mm. You know, and that's not through anything I know. I just think through what, you know, it's... I think the BBC does costume drama really well, but I think it's generally considered by most people that that's the one I can miss. But he's done with the historical, you know, stories. He has reinvigorated the concept of them. They can actually be something very different.
Yeah.
They can be silly balls out science fiction stories, and that also happens to have, you know, Rosa Parks or you know. So I think his thing is classic monsters and historical adventures.
Yeah.
I'm not quite sure he sticks the landing with the other types of stories. When he tries to do a story that's a bit Stephen Moffat-y or a bit Russell, I'm not sure it quite sticks the landing.
Yeah.
But when you feel like he's having fun writing this, and yeah, his scripts do actually have a life to them.
Yeah.
And they have a voice.
Yeah.
I think Chris Chibnall has a voice now, and it's an identifiable trait of a Chris Chibnall story would be something.
I would be fascinated to know what the shape of Series 13 was like before COVID, and what the original plan was, and how much of what we're getting now was originally there. Because part of me is thinking, well, do we have, in a way, COVID to thank for this series? Has the restrictions and, all right, well, you can only do this many episodes and you can only have this many people in a scene or whatever all the restrictions are, has that made Chris go, right, I have to really put my thinking cap on and how can I use this to my advantage?
Yeah.
And has that constructed something really good that otherwise might have just been like Series 12?
Well, exactly. You think of the constraints that they were working under in the classic series with literally no money.
Yes.
People writing scripts weeks before or days before they were supposed to be shooting the stories. You know, Douglas Adams cramming City of Death.
And
it's one of the best Doctor Who stories of all time.
Yeah.
Maybe Doctor Who actually just is produced better when it's under proper constraints.
Yeah.
When you say to somebody, we have to do this, but you've only got X number of hours or this much money, but it has to be at this level.
Yeah.
And everybody brings their A game, because everybody has.
Yeah.
The cinematography, the direction, the music, Seiga Nakanola's music.
Yes, that was another thing I wanted to mention. Love his little Santarin theme, is a bit Peter Howell-y, like Two Doctors.
Lots of drums.
Yeah, love it.
I think I was just watching it again before I came over. The end credits and the music, Sagan's theme tune and the aesthetic of the credits.
Yeah.
It kind of feels like it has all been building towards the aesthetic of Flux.
Yeah.
All the, you know, the music and the drum beat. It just, there's a certain through line and a vibe to Flux, this kind of end days thing.
Yeah.
And I don't know why, but the theme tune and the title sequence is really making me feel like, was it all just, was that the aesthetic to begin with? You know, like how much of this was going to be built up towards that? The crystals and the TARDIS, the crystal aesthetic, you know, it might be a complete coincidence, it might not be, but I just feel like everything has fallen into place. And, you know, maybe, we don't know what the first two seasons was, you know, what was the template? If we knew what Series 13 would be, untouched by COVID and all the regulations and things being changed and episodes being cut down, what would it have looked like? What would it have been?
Yeah.
You know, I think that is would be a fascinating thing to hear. I guess we have to wait to see until the end whether or not COVID, in fact, was beneficial, ultimately, if the story turns out to be an absolute classic as a whole.
I think the Chibnall era is going to be one of those where you really want to know, right, what is the warts and all behind the scenes on this? Because it felt like when Jodie was announced, there was such a clear plan of what was going to be going on, we're a writer's room with this or that. And then all of a sudden, oh, we're not a writer's room. That's something's happened there. And you're like, oh, okay.
Yeah.
And then suddenly, oh, we're a 5-year plan. Oh, no, we only wanted to do 3 years.
I have to say, I did watch Mr. TARDIS did a video. I can't remember which one it was, but he did mention the only time a 5-year plan was ever mentioned. And I will asterisk that, but the only time a 5-year plan was ever mentioned, as far as he could see, was James Stone, who was a former director for the show, I think that was his name, it's a friend of Chris Chibnall's, who was somebody who's directed for the show before, said that there's a 5-year plan, and that 5-year plan quote has only ever been attributed to him as far as Mr. Tyler could find it.
Okay.
But I'm sure I remember that Liverpool conference.
Yeah.
There was a mention of 5-year Evergreen content delivery pipeline.
Yeah, because it was all that bullshit.
It was all that. I remember Evergreen pipeline, and I'm sure I remember 5 years being mentioned at that event. But,
yeah.
You know, whatever. But what? What do you think? You know, if you were playing, guess the warts and all backstage history of this program, you know, was Jodie supposed to be doing this for longer, for less time? Was it always going to be 10 episodes every year? I mean, I'm sure, you know,
I'm sure COVID's the BBC, yeah, yeah, I'm sure the BBC would have wanted 10 episodes every year, at least.
Yeah.
I don't know. I can't, there must have been.
It does feel like there's something there.
It feels like something happened. It feels very much like something happened that perhaps someone stepped in and said, no, we don't like that.
Mm.
Do something else.
Mm.
Yeah.
And he's had his hand forced. And,
yeah.
But maybe now he's just going, fucking let me get on with what I want to
do. Yeah, yeah.
Because it
what
seems,
have you got to lose?
I know. And I know I've said that I really like, you know, I really like the Chibnall era and Jodie's run. But it does feel like someone has left the stabilizers off.
Mm.
And is this actually what Chris Chibnall has been capable of this whole time?
Yeah.
Or, like you say, is it the pressures of making this particular run that really made everybody bring their A game, and they just lightning in a bottle.
Yeah.
That series was perfect. I mean, it's not even done. We're 2 weeks in.
Yeah.
But, you know, the fact that it's got us talking like this.
Yeah.
Is a pretty good indication of the quality of it, you know?
Yeah, because usually when you have a second episode of Doctor Who for all of the new series run, the second episode sort of been like, yeah, it was all right.
Yeah.
End of the World, yeah, it's all right.
Yeah, Beast Below.
Beast Below, yeah.
Ghost Monument, yeah.
Smile, you know, it's just sort of like the...
It's a kind of gentle, you know, let's ease people into the show outside of an introduction or an Earthbound story.
Yeah.
You know, this is Doctor Who week to week is kind of like this.
Yeah.
It's a very broad stroke Doctor Who story, isn't it? But again, I don't think that way of thinking, it just doesn't come into the conversation with Flux, because that's not what they're doing for the series as a whole, or each individual episode doesn't follow that. You know, pick up a companion in contemporary Earth, once to the past, once to the future, returning villain, mid-series bump with a two-parter, Dr. Light episode, and a comedy story, and then the, you know, two or three-part finale and a Christmas special.
Yeah.
That's the template that we've expected. And the fact that maybe Chris Chibnall hasn't had, like, a massive series finale, and he's gone, let's do Ranskarav Kolos, and it feels like a bit of a, because we expect Journey's End.
Yeah.
We expect, you know, Big Bang, the Pandora opens.
Yeah.
And that just isn't what he wants to do with his stories. That's not the kind of Doctor Who that he wants to produce.
Yeah.
And maybe finally Flux is what he's wanted to produce this whole time. I think that's about as much as we can say, really. Can you think of anything else?
Is there anything we've missed?
I'll look through my list very quickly, but I think that's pretty much
reference to links.
Reference to links. I did say here, welcome back, Dan Starkey. All is forgiven. You know, we'll...
Yeah. Oh, yeah, for sure. It's not his fault,
but I've got his I've got the name of his Sontaran here somewhere. But yeah, that he was very good. Sflid, I think his name is, yeah.
Yeah, little reference to links. That was fun. And yeah, I think that was really about it. I liked that we finally see the probic vent being used with, like, it has a use.
I know, and
it all ties back into the Sontaran experiment, because that is all about, oh, he has to go back into his ship and re-energize. And it's like, oh, it's like that's being brought back. So it was nice. It was a nice through line of the Sontaran lore.
And, you know, also, you know, beyond all of this stuff, beyond the importance of the show and this season and what it means going forward for the programme and for the history of the show, both on and off screen, Sontaran's on horseback.
Yeah, cool.
You got that. It looked dope. You know, you've got this massive sprawling battle. There are things in there to nitpick, and there are things to go, don't know if that quite worked.
Yeah.
And just like last week, we don't actually know if that's intentional, or are we supposed to pay attention to this or not. You know, maybe by the end of it, the holes will become more apparent.
Yeah.
But I am taking this, as I hope everybody else is, just, you know, Sunday night, switch it on, let it wash over you. Don't think about it too much. Enjoy it as an experience. If you want to, you know, go back in and watch it a second time, you know, I'm doing it for these reviews.
Yeah.
But also because, oh, I missed that line of dialogue. You
yeah.
know, the sound mixing actually has been quite poor.
Mm.
You know, it doesn't feel like it's meant to yeah. be heard out of speakers in your telly.
I found that. Watching it on the telly, not so great. When I'm in the office and I've got my nice editing headphones on, oh, I can hear it much better.
This is something some people may not know. When you're editing something for television, you usually have a really beautiful pair of like yeah. high quality speakers, and then during the mix and the mastering and stuff, you put it through the cheapest quality desktop speakers and
yeah.
you know, little headphones that you can, to make sure that it sounds good for everyone.
Yeah.
I kind of feel like that it hasn't happened here.
Yeah.
It's like it's missed a layer of the mastering yeah. and the mixing that would have brought some of the dialogue yeah. out. You know, same thing with Murray Gold. It's too fucking loud. Yeah. I can't hear a line of dialogue.
And I think the trouble is, as someone who's edited a lot of stuff over yeah. the years, you do, when you're on a project, you hear stuff that other people can't.
Yeah.
In a completely different way. And I remember when I've edited like Action Figure Adventures, I know that's a ridiculous thing to bring up, but I remember being like, oh yeah, this is sounds fine.
Yeah, yeah.
And then like showing it to Johnny and being going, I really can't hear what's being said then. And you're like, oh, that's because I know those words because
exactly.
I've heard them a million times without putting the Atmos
it's
track
the same
on
thing
the
when
music.
I did Dark Dimension. I was like, actually, yeah, it's not clear they've yeah. been moving around or walking or whatever.
Yeah.
So when, you know, the main complaint we have for this story is that the sound mixing wasn't quite as good as it could have been, we're in a pretty good place.
Very, very much so.
So next week, Once Upon Time.
Yeah.
We're on the planet Time.
Yeah.
What do you think is going to happen, Matt? We think that the Cybermen are going to be blinking, you miss it.
Yeah, I don't think they'll be in it very much.
Division, because we've got Division guns.
Division, I think, yeah. I think this will be the story that... It won't tell us everything, but it will give us a lot more about Swarm and all of that.
Mm.
And Vinder, we'll probably find out more about him
yep.
this time round. The Weeping Angels obviously appear in the trailer. Again, I think that Weeping Angels scene will be... a blink and you'll miss it sort of thing.
I agree.
It will be a very, like, oh, this is a setup for the next story.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Maybe
like, that's towards the end.
Yeah, that's what I was thinking.
That's the last time we see Yaz in that story
or something.
Yeah,
Yaz going to get zapped by an angel and end up with Claire in the 60s or whatever year it's
Oh, got Claire as well.
Yeah,
Claire.
She's
the drop thread.
Yeah.
Yeah. She's the one.
Yeah.
If Di is passenger.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So this is... Yeah, I think next week will be more of a, not an info dump, but there will be some, the pieces will start to come together a bit more.
I think
more,
so.
And then we'll be derailed by the Weeping Angel story in week four, maybe another whatever in week five, and then obviously week six.
Maybe the Angel episode is the standalone or something like that,
yeah.
you know. Because their inclusion, you know, the Sontarans have used the Flux strategically.
Yeah.
We've dispensed with the Lupari, you know, we know that they're, you know, fine, you know, that they're goodies. So all you're left with is like, why are the Weeping Angels here then? What's their deal?
Yeah.
Cause,
and that Ood.
and the Ood, yeah. Mm. I mean, but again, I think that'll be like a, oh, there's an Ood working on this ship.
Yes, I don't
it'll
think
it'll
be
like
anything,
that.
Yeah.
It's so exciting to think that, what I hope happens in episode three is that enough questions that we're legitimately aching to have answers for do get answered in episode three because it's you just want enough to know,
just to sit you a little bit.
Give it another two episodes and the other half of those questions are going to get answered.
Yeah.
So I would like to know more about Swarm and Azure and maybe Passenger, but I think that they're going to leave that till maybe a little bit later on.
Yeah.
I'd like to know as much as possible about the Mori and this planet.
Yeah.
In this story, and I kind of want that to be done and wrapped up. Not the story, but I just want to know everything I need to know about that now,
right.
So that I can focus on the Flux.
Yeah,
because I think the Flux, you know, the show is named after it.
Mm.
I just don't feel like I'm getting enough of the event and the actual effect that it's having.
Yeah.
I don't know how much of the crazy shit that's happening with the TARDIS, the Mori being damaged, and all that kind of stuff. I don't know how much of it is actually to do with the flux. It feels like there's other things in play that we're not aware of yet. The Master. Are we going to get the Master towards the end of the series?
Yeah.
You know, we're going to get our contractual obligation Dalek story, hopefully, in the New Year special. Yeah. But what else is there still to come? We've seen so little of this season besides the Ood. Yeah. There's not much else that we have actually seen promo images-wise or anything like that.
Yeah, and so, Chris said that, didn't he, in all the press stuff beforehand. He said, you know, there's a lot of guest stars that we haven't announced and probably won't announce.
Are we going to get, Ruth? We think Ruth might
Joe Martin's Doctor will turn up.
Do we think we're going to get another Doctor? It kind of feels like it could be.
Yeah.
They could have done well enough to hide that in this series. Yeah. That, you know, David Tennant could be in the last story. It kind of feels like there could be a big drop. Like, whoa, I can't believe that this person's come back.
Yeah.
Rose, you know, Rose could come back. The Tenth Doctor could come back. It feels like there's something that could happen towards the end of the series that has a big crazy guest star.
Yeah.
It's great to be able to speculate about that stuff now and care and be invested. It's wonderful.
Yeah.
So, you know, let us know what you thought of Doctor Who Flux. Are we the only two people in the world that are gushing about it this much?
I don't know. I think Twitter looked pretty good.
I think
everyone seems to like it, and I think everyone seems to like Swarm and Azure.
Yeah.
You know, they're wonderfully camp, but wonderfully evil. You know, she's horrible. She's just, they're just so horrible.
The nasty pieces of work.
Yeah, fantastically acted.
Yeah.
Fantastically acted by both of them. I think they're just brilliant.
I don't need a big scary monster with 100 eyes and a million teeth to walk into a room and scare me. If they both walked into a room now, I
would shit myself.
Especially that passenger bloke coming up behind me. It's like, they'd all fuck me up in very different ways. You know, and I do not want to be in this space with them. They're just the worst.
Yeah, I think that's it, isn't it? You know, to have that moment where he puts his hands on Yaz's face, that feels like, wow, you've crossed a line.
Yeah.
Because that doesn't happen.
That's you know, the whole thing I was saying about it feels like they've come from a different program.
Yeah.
They are not abiding by the rules that the last two seasons have set up.
And it's the same with the TARDIS. The TARDIS is now horrifically compromised.
Yeah.
The safe space of the program is no longer a safe space. Yeah. And our hero is also incredibly compromised because she doesn't have a clue what's going on.
No.
And therefore we empathise with her because we're like, if you don't know what's going on and we don't know what's going on, shit.
Swarm is ahead of the game.
We're
seeing enough that, you know, to point towards the fact he's got the strategic advantage. Mm. He knows he's been here before.
Yeah.
He knows what he has to do
to
make these things fall into place to, you know, have this final confrontation with the Doctor and ultimately win it.
Yeah.
But we don't know any of the stuff that's come before. We don't know what's to come, and it's really, really exciting.
Very exciting.
Really exciting. I'll let you do the sign off. I feel like I've gushed enough about this. I don't know how to wrap it up.
Well, just thank you very much for watching. I hope you enjoyed War of the Sontarans as much as we clearly did. And I think, you know, at the end of the day, if my brother turned around and said that was really good, he actually said to me, because I said oh, I don't know if I'm going to have time to rewatch this, and he said, oh, did you rewatch last week's? I said, yeah. I said, I rewatched it ahead, well, part of it.
Yeah.
And he said, oh, if you rewatch this one again, I'll watch it with you. And he said, and I haven't rewatched an episode of new series Doctor Who in years. He said, I can't remember that. He said, I did maybe with Christopher Eccleston and David Tennant at the beginning. He said, but afterwards, he said, I watched it once and that was it. So for him to say that, and then for him to also say, Jodie Whittaker was good, wouldn't she, in this week? What is going on?
There is a real flux going
on. That is
That is, you know, that's the real flux, is that Doctor Who is really good again.
Yeah.
It's brilliant. Thank you all very much for watching. And we'll see you, and you'll hear us, and
whatever.
Yeah,
next week. Next time. Oh, bye-bye.